This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
And a base hit left field. So it was 8 years in the making. But Derek Bubba Starling has his first big league hit and RBI. And he ties the game at one in the fifth inning.
And now Nicky Lopez, and he grounds it through the right side.
Soler is going to be waved home, and Castellanos will play it to second base. And the Royals lead 2-1 in the fifth inning.
Now to Mondesi. And now it's 14 in a row. Ground ball to Dozier, and that's the inning. And now Keller has set down 16 in a row. And that's back to the middle. Mondesi was guarding the middle. And now there are two down, and Keller set down 18 in a row.
On to his left foot, Gerso, and it's deflected behind the line. And Sporting Kansas City have broken through. Gutierrez, and he sneaks it past the keeper. Felipe Gutierrez has doubled the advantage for Sporting Kansas City. Putting it back across, and Gerso finishes this time. Whether he got the first one or not, Gerso has a goal, and there is the final whistle. Sporting Kansas City with a convincing victory in Vancouver, Sporting their second consecutive clean sheet as they win it by a final score of 3-0.
Oh, man. Last night was so much fun. Kansas City sports fans, unbelievable. It was one of those nights where I just didn't want to do anything. Just wanted to take in a game. And by the way, great choice on the song. That's the 1985 Royals World Series celebration, one of their songs. The highlight video. You're the best around. Good job, Chris Bullock.
I can honestly say last night was the first time I really, really enjoyed watching Royals baseball in like a long time. There was something, I guess also, it was 2 hours and 30 minutes. That was kind of a nice change up.
Denny Matthews will be happy.
And and Brad Keller was absolutely phenomenal.
Sat down
18 straight batters.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Bubba Starling getting a clutch RBI first hit of his major league career. Sporting Kansas City tops it off with a 3-0 victory. What a night. It was awesome.
It was one of those nights, like I said, where I just didn't really want to do much. I just wanted to take in a game, hopefully see a win, watch the Royals, who had the early start at 6. Sporting KC had the late start at 9 o'clock because they were out in Western Canada in Vancouver. So I'm watching the Royals. Let me set up the show first, and then we'll get into it. So coming up at 9:30, on our show for the first time, we'll have Eric Horn from the Daily Oklahoman. He covers the Oklahoma City Thunder and just the Oklahoman. It used to be the Daily Oklahoman.
I think when I looked on Twitter, I think it just is the Oklahoman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm old, so I still call it the Daily Oklahoman. So he covers the Oklahoma City Thunder, and of course, they've traded away everybody. And so we'll talk to him about the future, because there are people in Kansas City who are Thunder fans because they're the closest franchise to us.
Well, and in general, just the whole NBA.
The NBA saga, yeah.
Yeah, in the Thunder being a huge part of it. This is a huge thing that has just happened around, whether it be the Paul George trade or Russell Westbrook, who has been a staple of not only that franchise, but as an Oklahoma City Thunder player in the NBA in general. He's been there forever. So
yes, and plus they've also retired Nick Collison's jersey, so all the KU fans are happy. So Eric Horn on the furious last few weeks in the NBA, and at the center of a lot of it, the Oklahoma City Thunder. At 10 o'clock, Dennis Dodd from CBS is going to join us. Dennis lives here in Kansas City. He's a St. Louis native, so we're going to talk to him about college football. We'll talk to him about coaches on the hot seat. And that will probably not include KU or K-State since they have first-year coaches. Mizzou, probably not either with Barry Odom. They've been pretty good in his three seasons. They have obviously the post-game suspension this year, but that's out of his control. We'll see if they get that appeal. Plus, we'll talk about college athletes being able to profit using their name, image, and likeness. And this is not about making college athletes into millionaires. That's not going to happen. But simply, you know, using your name and face in video games, using your name and face in marketing campaigns, whatever it is. Dennis Dodd has a deep dive into that. And if you want to prep yourself, go to CBSSports.com and read his very thoughtful, very researched article on that. So Dennis Dodd at 10 o'clock. At 11 o'clock, this might be a first, okay? So Soren Petro is going to be on the show. Now, I have filled in for Soren on his show from 10 to 2 o'clock on many occasions when he's been out of town or unavailable. And I believe I've been a guest on his show maybe once, maybe twice. I'd have to ask him. This will be the first time Soren will be my guest, which means I will be asking the questions. I will be asking the thought-provoking queries of the day. I will be putting it to Soren. And if Soren's listening right now, you're going to get a Final Four. Just like you do to your guests, I'm giving you a Final Four. I think you'll like most of it. You may not like one of the questions, but Soren Petro is coming on because the big news came out last week that Soren, along with Curtis Siebold and Jed Marshall, will be moving from the 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. slot on weekdays to the drive time 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. show. That's a life-altering thing. If you've worked a time slot for 15 years, you've developed your audience, you've developed the kind of show that you want to do, and then you pick up and move to a different time slot. Drive time is, I mean, it's awesome. Drive time is what a lot of people on radio work for. But that's a big move. That's a life-altering move. Not only in terms of prestige, but in terms of your daily life. How you balance that. That's not an easy thing. So Soren's going to come in. Plus, we'll ask him, you know, we'll ask him about the American Century Championships. We'll ask him about Chiefs football. Ask him about the Royals, Sporting KC. I know he loves Sporting KC. We'll get into a little bit of all of it. So let's start off with something that Chris Bohlig brought up just a couple of minutes ago. The last 2 days being a Royals fan, because look, I'm an independent member of the media. I don't play favorites. Oh, okay, let's be honest here. Most of the people who work here at Sports Radio 810 WHB and Union Broadcasting are Kansas City sports fans, all right? And that includes me. I'm a Royals fan. When I cover the team, I can be independent. I can be critical, and by critical, I mean positive or negative. When you talk about critical, it doesn't always mean negative. I can do that. But when I'm at home watching the game, when I'm not covering the team, I'm a fan. I want my team to win. The best moment for me, okay, I was in seventh grade when the Royals won the 85 World Series. That was awesome when I was a kid. But for me, the best thing was 2015 because I got to celebrate. It was the one day I had off in like a month when I was working for a TV station here in town. And it was the one day I got off because I believe I was doing the Chiefs postgame show that day, so I wasn't covering the Royals that day. I got to watch the Royals win a World Series championship with my kids, with my family, with my friends. That was the best feeling in the world. So the last couple of days, you know, coming out of the All-Star break, the Royals are 30, 31 games under 500, season's lost. What are we going to do here in the second half? What are we going to have to talk about? Are we going to be able to have something to enjoy? And the Royals call up Bubba Starling. Awesome. Gardner Edgerton High School, Kansas City kid, first-round pick, fifth overall. He's been laboring in the minor leagues for 7.5 years. Struggled with the bat, fought injury. It looked like every time he turned a corner, he got an injury. And it sucked for him. It stunk for the Royals, too. But they call him up. He's getting his shot, and they're going to play him every day. That's what they said. I mean, not every single day, but you know what I mean. He's not coming up here to ride the bench. I'm like, okay, got a little something to root for. Little something. So Friday night, first game out of the All-Star break, 8-5 win over the Tigers. Now the Tigers stink. They're awful, but I don't care. The Royals got to win. Bubba Starling in his first big league game got a walk, scored a run, was on the bases, struck out, had a couple of groundouts, but a good first day. And the Royals got to win. I'm like, okay, that's good. Bubba's up here. It's exciting. They had 25,000 plus. Okay, let's go to Saturday night. What are we going to do? Brad Keller, he's been okay at times. He's been knocked around at times. He was the opening day starter. Will the second half see Brad Keller get back on track? Damn straight. That was his dominating performance as I can remember, maybe going back to opening day, because that was pretty solid too. Brad Keller last night, 8 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run. He came into the night second in the American League in surrendering walks. The second most walks issued in the American League. How many did Brad Keller walk last night? Zero. A big fat zero. And he had seven strikeouts. And you want to talk about pitch efficiency? And Chris, you know this. I always look at the pitch count and how many were strikes. So Brad Keller in eight innings, 104 pitches, 82 strikes. That's 79%. I'm rounding up. It's like 7, 8, 8, 8, 8 something. 79% were strikes. 79%. Slider was filthy. You want to talk about throwing filth on the field? Brad Keller's slider was filthy. And that's a good thing in baseball terms, by the way, for pitchers. I also like to look at first pitch strikes. Are you getting ahead of your batters? Are you getting ahead of the batters? 28 batters faced, 23 first pitch strikes. 23 times out of 28, Brad Keller was getting ahead. Called strikes, 22. Swing and miss strikes, 13. That tells you how nasty his stuff was last night. Foul ball strikes, 26. In-play strikes, 20. Now, a lot of that, you know, it might go over your head, and that's fine. The bottom line, he was dealing. I mean, he ought to be moving to Vegas and set up a table.
He just looked locked in, too. You could tell with his face.
Oh, yeah.
Just looked at his body language.
Body language
was
awesome.
He was so focused. And the tempo he was working at, the pace.
Fast.
It was awesome.
When you're working that good, and Chris, that's a great point. When you're dealing, there's nothing more you want to do than throw that next pitch. Nothing. The best I've ever seen at being quick while being good is Mark Burley, former Chicago White Sox pitcher, because he'd pitch a game in 2.5 hours without even blinking. Get the ball. I know what I'm going to throw. Let's go. Brad Keller was doing that last night. Martin Maldonado, give me the signal. What are we doing? Okay, let's go. Let's go. I believe that game was 2 hours and 44 minutes. Very fast. Good clip. When you're confident, and you saw when he came
off.
There's
some great plays in the defense, on the defensive side,
yeah,
too.
Mondesi.
Dozier with that
Dozier,
bare hand.
Yep.
That was incredible.
Turning double plays. Defense was awesome. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. When you're dialed in as a pitcher and you're working fast, your players are on their toes. Everybody in the infield's on their toes. The outfield's ready. What's coming up? We getting a ground ball here? We getting a fly ball? Because something's happening. Either we're getting this is going to be a strikeout or ball's going to be in play. 12 ground balls last night, 5 fly balls. That tells you he's keeping it down in the zone. And the fielders were ready.
Yeah, that you pointed, I was about to say that, keeping the ball down in the zone, keeping that fastball low in the zone.
Yep.
And inducing ground balls. That's what you want to do.
Yep.
Especially if guys are on base, double play opportunities. So, yes, Keller, that granted, let's keep it in perspective.
It's Detroit.
It is the Tigers,
yes.
And their team offensively is horrible.
Yes.
So, but it's
doesn't
still
matter.
It's still positive.
Yeah.
It's a positive sign, and it's good to see that from Keller, and hopefully, kind of get over his early season struggles with the walk. Because he, in the past, I think when I was looking at it yesterday for Baseball Tonight, in the past two starts, the two times he's faced the Tigers, he's had 8 walks against them, and when a team is not. When you have a team that is not good offensively, you have to be able to attack those hitters and get strikes and make outs.
Yep. And Brad Keller did that last night. Just fantastic. And when he came off, and you can always tell in the dugout, they take a shot of the dugout, and Fox Sports Midwest is one of the best at doing this. When they have an idea of the pitcher's coming out, they take a shot of the dugout where the manager and the other players are patting him on the back, saying great job, so you know he's done. Ned Yost is talking to him, telling him what a great job he did. And Keller looks like he's still dialed in, like, what? I'm not done. But it's the right move. Got a 4-1 lead. You got Ian Kennedy in the bullpen. Let's go. Ian Kennedy, how long was that top of the ninth? Is that like 45 seconds? 12 pitches, 9 strikes, 3 outs for Ian Kennedy. It was about maybe 2.5 minutes.
Made quick work of
it. It was done quick. So Brad Keller, job well done. Awesome. So that's a great start to the night. Bubba Starling, he had that debut Friday night, got his first big league hit. He had runners on base. And it was kind of, he said after the game, you know, it wasn't the greatest hit in the world. He kind of, He didn't turn it inside out. He pulled it. He kind of twisted it over, I guess. He rolled it over through the infield. And that's fine.
It's a hit.
He drove in a run. His parents are going crazy, and I don't know who the little baby was that Bubba's mom was holding. I don't know if that's but it was awesome.
Still a single in the box score.
And, guys who have been coming up the last couple of days, Chesler Cuthbert coming up with big hits. Had the home run Friday night, had the two RBI hit last night. Whit Merrifield still leading the league in hits. He has an 11-game hitting streak. Nicky Lopez had an RBI. And look, the start of the game was not great for Royals hitters. Matthew Boyd, the starter for the Tigers, who, by the way, there were a half a dozen scouts in the stands last night because he's trade bait. He's been striking out guys at a pretty good clip. I think he's averaging 12 per nine, which is third best in the American League.
Yeah, you talked about that yesterday, yeah. I think, too. And the funny thing is when they showed he's been great. He was great through his first 12 starts, and his last six, his ERA has kind of jumped up
climbed
to
up
above six, like in those six starts, but still, as you said, trade bait.
Yep. And he had the Royals locked down for four innings. Those first four innings, you want to talk about how fast the game was going? Keller was knocking them down, and Matthew Boyd was knocking the Royals down. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, strikeout, 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 over and over and over. And then the Royals found a little way to open a little wedge, put some runs on the board, get a win. So I came away from that game last night thinking, this second half might be kind of fun. It's two games, small sample size. I get it. But I'm the guy who takes the leap. I'm the guy who buys in on the smallest morsel, whatever it is, something to give me hope, something to give me a reason to be excited. Nicky Lopez, exciting. Whit Merrifield, exciting. Bubba Starling, exciting. Brad Keller looks like he's found a little something. Yeah, against the Tigers. I don't care. The second half might see some stuff that's kind of fun. So I'm going to have fun. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy watching these guys. Today it's Homer Bailey against Jordan Zimmermann out at Kauffman Stadium. Well, baseball tonight at noon. Okay, so that's how the night starts, right? Royals get an early start, 6 o'clock, Saturday game. Then it's the late night Sporting KC game. We all know Sporting's been struggling this year, if you're a fan. Got a little ray of hope last week, winning 1-0 at home against Chicago. Chicago's a team that's been down, but you want to keep teams down. So a little ray of hope last week. Got that early goal against Chicago, locked it down on defense, got the win, even though they probably should have had 3 or 4 more goals. That's fine. They got the win. They got the 3 points. Fighting. Get back to the playoff zone. Still not there. So last night, the late night start in Vancouver. Vancouver's worse. They were 7 points out of the playoff spot. They're not playing good soccer. That's a place you got to go. And Sporting KC does not have many road wins. They had one going into last night. That's a place you got to go. And quite frankly, this is a term used in sports. Sometimes you got to go kick somebody's ass. That's got to happen sometimes. Sporting KC went to Vancouver and kicked their ass for 90 minutes plus the extra they added on. It was 5 minutes, whatever it is. Kicked their ass. They got the own goal early, 24 minutes in. And look, you can say an own goal. Well, the other team knocked it into the goal. Gerso shot that across where the only move for the defender to make was to get a deflection of some kind. And unfortunately for Vancouver, it deflected into the goal. I still credit Gerso and Sporting KC. They put themselves in position to get that goal, to put the defense on their heels, to put that goalkeeper in a bad spot. And they got it. 24 minutes in, one goal. Feeling pretty good. Sporting KC's defense was awesome. Tim Melia, off the charts fantastic last night.
It's some great saves.
In goal for Sporting KC.
Yeah, and Sporting KC going back, heavy dominant possession team.
Yes.
Controlling team, and Sporting KC, 73% possession to 27% possession for Vancouver.
That's absurd in professional soccer.
18 shots and 7 on target for Sporting. Yeah. So they were
on it.
All night.
Yeah.
You kind of knew that goals were coming.
Yeah.
The pressure was being put on Vancouver's defense. And at some point, there's going to be a breakthrough. And, of course, the own goal. And then the 56th minute, I believe, with Gutierrez.
Gutierrez. From outside the box.
Snuck it past the keeper on the ground. And then Gerso again in the 90th. So it was all around a great great win.
Yeah. And it's, as they say in soccer, Sporting KC was on the front foot all night, not the back foot. They were the aggressors. That was Peter Vermes' soccer. Possession, being on the front foot. And Peter has said this over the years, probably going back to his playing days. I don't remember. I covered Peter in 2000 when he was with then the Wizards when they won the MLS Cup. But he said, when we go on the road, a lot of teams go on the road in Major League Soccer and play for a draw, or they play back. They don't attack. Sporting KC under Peter Vermes has always gone on the road and wanted to enforce their will, not allow the other team to play their brand of soccer in their stadium in front of their fans. And by the way, shout out to the Cauldron, the big supporters for Sporting KC. They usually travel, and traveling parties vary depending on the location. They had a pretty good traveling party last night.
That's awesome. A good venue to go to. Excuse me, I want to make a correction.
Yes.
I was looking at, when I looked up on ESPN, I was actually looking at the 2017 match between Vancouver. But now it's
20 shots last night, right?
Yeah, it was 20 shots, excuse me, and 10 on goal. And
you shorten them, Chris.
I know, and 56% possession compared to 44. Still dominant in terms of that. But I just wanted to make that correction.
56% is how you win an election. That's just...
Yes.
And it just awesome. And Gerso at the end, that last goal, that was the finisher. That was Cobra Kai. Finish him off! Finish him!
Top it off.
Finish him! And by the way, Gerso, I hope he's in an ice bath somewhere, because Vancouver put the beat down on him. They knocked him down. They hit him. They did whatever they could to slow him down. He's not the biggest guy in the world. But Vancouver made a concerted effort to hit him and knock him down. And there were a lot of cheap shots in that game. There were a lot of yellow cards. Vancouver, is that how you play when you stink? I'm not saying Sporting KC is going to win the MLS Cup. I'm just saying, is that how you want to play? Apparently you're not familiar with how Peter Vermes' teams play. You want to knock us down? Okay, we'll kick your ass. And that's what they did. By the way, have I said kicked ass like 14 times in the last 5 minutes?
I think
I should probably dial it back. It's a Sunday morning. Folks on the way to church or their services or mass or whatever.
Or maybe they're not.
Maybe they're not. I don't know.
Maybe they like to be a little irreverent on a Sunday morning.
Hey, whatever it takes.
We're going to get irreverent later. So, Brad, we're just getting the people ready.
Yeah, I'm setting the stage. So Gerso is getting knocked around all over the park. They're knocking him down. They're kicking him. Doing everything they can to slow him down. And he was a force to be reckoned with. That was the Gerso from weeks ago. That was the Gerso from last year. That was
CCL, CONCACAF Champions League Gerso.
That was vintage Gerso. So Sporting KC, huge win on the road, 3 points, getting closer to that playoff zone. And so that was the capper to the night. So that it finished a little after 11 o'clock. By the way, Nate Bucchetti, Matt Lawrence, great job on the broadcast. Carter Augustine on the sidelines, awesome. Good job all around on the broadcast crew, and you heard it here live on Sports Radio 810 WHB as well. Chris, last night, the game got over, and I don't want to say I'm giggling. I get some guy on Twitter tries to troll me saying, "Nah, you laugh too much. It sounds fake." And I'm like, I like to laugh, okay? I like to have a good time. That Sporting KC game got done last night. I'm not saying I'm laughing. It wasn't exactly a giggle fest over at my house, but I was smiling. I was like, damn, that was a fun night. Bubba Starling gets his first hit for the Royals. Brad Keller dominates on the mound. Sporting KC goes and, once again, kicks some ass. That was a fun night to be a Kansas City sports fan. That was fantastic. Well done all the way around. Just a blast. An absolute blast. Start to finish. From 6 o'clock to 11:30. Just great. Sometimes on a Sunday, you don't have a lot of positive things to talk about because the Royals obviously, you have not had a good first half. Sporting KC has struggled in their first half. But dang, for one night, just awesome. Just feel good about your sports teams.
Just bottle it up.
Bottle up. Take it on. Chiefs, when you get to training camp, you better run out there like that. I'm just kidding. Training camp is not about wins and losses. Unless you're in a position battle, fighting for a job. It's not what training camp's about. But dang it, make people feel good. I also felt good yesterday. I want to throw in a Chiefs note. We're coming up on a break here. So yesterday, somebody posted, and I apologize, I don't remember. It was retweeted 1,000 times. there was video of Patrick Mahomes throwing a football from the field at Arrowhead Stadium to outside the stadium. The Chiefs probably posted it. I know Channel 5 and Danny Welniak posted it.
It was 41 Action News.
41 Action News was the first to post.
Yeah,
okay.
It was their helicopter.
It was their helicopter who was out there when he did it.
Yes.
Okay. So 41 Action News, Mick Schaefer, all you guys over there, hat tip. And then Colin Coward, who's becoming one of the bigger jackasses in broadcasting. He's, you know what, Colin Coward is really good at what he does. He's been a really good radio host, but now he's turned into, how can I get trolls? How can I get clickbait? How can I get at replies? How can I piss people off? And I don't like that because the guy is ridiculously talented. Colin Coward is talented. That's why he gets paid. You know, he has a seven-figure salary. There's a reason why. He's very good at what he does. So he jumps in. Well, while Patrick Mahomes is busy screwing around, Tom Brady is working on his timing routes. Really? Tom Brady doesn't make cameo appearances in Entourage TV shows and movies. Tom Brady's not out at celebrity golf tournaments. I saw the video of Brady last week hitting a golf ball and cursing in front of his children. That's not a big deal to me. It happens. But really, that's the clickbait. That's the at-reply bait that Colin Coward throws out. You know what? Patrick Mahomes threw a football at the stadium. That's pretty damn cool.
That it was.
He's not.
Glad he's on my team.
Yes. That's my quarterback. Saw that response a lot of times. He's not trick shot. What's his name? Who was the backup quarterback for the Chiefs for a little bit. Who's still bouncing around. Alex Tanny. Trick shot. He made some YouTube videos with his trick shots. It's entertaining. He's still bouncing around the league. All right. So we got the show rolling. We got two wins. And I'm amped. I'm excited. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to be joined by, you're laughing. What are you laughing about, Chris?
This has been fun.
Yeah. I don't usually roll out like this on a Sunday morning, but.
And the Colin Coward impression.
Yeah.
Good.
That's my go-to jackass voice. Well, Tom Brady's out here, working on timing routes. BS. Whatever. Like I said, Colin's talented. He makes seven figures for a reason. I just wish when guys got to that level, they wouldn't resort to this, but okay. So coming up next, we're going to visit with Eric Horn from the Oklahoman. Covers the Oklahoma City Thunder, dialed into the NBA, and the Thunder have been in the middle of two of the biggest stories of the offseason. So Eric Horn, first-time guest, we'll do that. You are listening to a charged-up Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. I'm excited. Chris Boley is too. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Trying to bring me back down a little bit, Chris, after that electrifying first segment. Man, I was charged up today.
Let's keep it going.
That's all right.
We're here through baseball tonight. We can get it through baseball tonight.
I don't know if I'll keep that same level through one o'clock, but I'll try.
I'll try.
You can do that. All right, coming up later in the show at 10 o'clock, Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, will join us, talk college football. We'll talk coaches on the hot seat going into the season, and we'll talk about college athletes being able to make a little change off their name, image, and likeness. Before we get to Dennis at 10, just go to CBSSports.com and read the story on name, image, and likeness. It's a deep dive, very well researched, and Dennis did a great job on it. So we'll talk to Dennis at 10 o'clock. At 11 o'clock, Soren Petro will be in studio, host of the program. Used to be from 10 to 2 p.m. for the last 15 years. Now, he and the team, Curtis Seabolt, Jed Marshall, are moving from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. We're going to talk about that move, his time at the American Century Championships, a little Chiefs football, and I'll give him the final four that he normally gives his guests. Right now, we're going to welcome in for the first time Eric Horn from the Oklahoman, who covers the Oklahoma City Thunder. Eric, how are you on this Sunday morning?
Oh, I'm great, fellas. Nobody's been traded yet.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking about that before you came on. I'm like, I wonder who, you know, we see all the, you know, the names on ESPN, the Woj Bombs and Ramona Shelbourne and all that. Wow, they must be working 24/7. But for a beat writer, for a team, you've been the busiest beat writer in America for the last month.
I guess so. I mean, I think your Lakers folks have probably been up there too, but you know, it's not really out of the ordinary from the workload standpoint. It's just like the times you're working at.
Right.
Like, for instance, when the Paul George news trade, when the Paul George trade news broke, I was actually asleep. And then I woke up in the middle of the night, and I saw I had many, many messages and calls, and I was like, well, I guess I better get to work. So then, you know, I start reporting and writing, and next thing I know, it's midday, and I haven't slept since whenever, and like 2 a.m. And, you know, it just kind of, you know, it's been an interesting week with weird sleep patterns. And I'm excited for the season to start because things get a little bit more regimented once September hits.
Yeah, the off season, and look, we cover the Chiefs and the Royals and Sporting KC and KU and K-State and Mizzou. And when the season is rolling, it's your standard day-to-day, the game is tomorrow, the game is today, what happened yesterday kind of thing. But the off-season, things happen at odd times. And, you know, these trades happen at midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. You never know when these things get completed. So it's an odd time for someone like you who covers a daily beat for a professional team like the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah. Yeah, it just makes for weird hours, like you said. You know, when you're covering the team every day, you know exactly what time you have to be somewhere, and typically when to expect certain things to be announced or happen. Every now and then, you'll have a trade break or a guy get released, but it fits within your typical pocket of time and deadline. But you know, as we've seen this off season, the NBA with so much player movement. It's really unpredictable. You know, you could wake up one day, as we did last week, and be thinking about, you know, how's the Thunder going to manage their books in order to fit these minimum contracts they signed, like Nerlens Noel and Mike Muscala and Alec Burks. And then a week later, you're writing a piece about how people are emotionally shaken by Russell Westbrook leaving or being traded. So things happen fast in the NBA, man.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Eric Horn, who covers the Oklahoma City Thunder for the Oklahoman. Let's start with Russell Westbrook and work backwards. You've got a piece up that's on your Twitter account, Inside Russell Westbrook's Final Night as a Thunder Player. And we saw the tweets coming out when it happened. He was hosting an event at a comedy club when he found out about it, which has to be one of the more weird things in your professional career when you know a trade could happen or may happen or they're working on a trade. You're at this event. You're out here to have fun. You're probably out there to raise money. And all of a sudden, your life changes forever.
Yeah, and I think it was more of a shock to the people there and the people involved in Westbrook himself. I think that he knew going into the trade into the event tonight or within a reasonable time frame of him actually making his first appearance there, that this was going to happen. Russell's a meticulous guy. The Thunder was in communication with him and his agent constantly throughout the process, and they wouldn't have made this move without you know him being aware that it was going to happen. So he wouldn't have been put into an awkward situation like that. You know, the news broke probably about 20 minutes or so before the event actually got started, I think. And, you know, it was kind of funny. And I don't think this is a coincidence that Westbrook was at the event wearing a black hat, a red shirt, and kind of these turquoise shorts. Like, this guy doesn't just wear stuff willy-nilly or just do things in his life without thinking about them. He's very meticulous about the details of his life and how he does things. And I think he sends messages through, you know, the clothes that he wears and the things that he says. He's very particular. So this guy basically showed up at his comedy show that was for charity wearing, you know, some Rockets colors almost.
Right.
And I think it was a situation where he knew where he wanted to go, and it was a matter of when the deal was going to get done. And it happens to get done when he's making a public appearance where people check their phones and basically get crushed as they have Westbrook in front of them for this entire night. So it made for an awkward kind of vibe the entire night, as I wrote, but it also made for one where it was kind of this like impromptu send-off. Like people got a chance to say goodbye to him in a way that I don't think they would have otherwise if he hadn't have done this charity event. So it was actually kind of cool.
Yes, and we're visiting with Eric Horn, who covers the Oklahoma City Thunder for the Oklahoman. And, you know, this one was a little bit different for me, Eric. When you see a star player leave a team like LeBron the first time he left Cleveland, fans burned his jerseys. The second time he left Cleveland, they burned his jerseys. And we see this over and over and over again. But Russell Westbrook being, you know, the last Seattle Supersonic on the team and the original Oklahoma City Thunder team, to me, this doesn't feel like, oh, he's turning his back on us. This feels like, we get it. They traded away everybody. We lost everybody. We're not going to win, and he needs to go do his thing in Houston. It feels a little different. Is that the feeling in Oklahoma City?
Yeah, no question. I think there, if there's any animosity, it's toward the Thunder either not getting the job done while Westbrook, Durant, and Harden were a core together. And that points to a bunch of different things, whether it's the players themselves not accomplishing what they needed to do, Sam Presti not putting the requisite pieces around these guys that people feel were necessary to win a championship, them not bringing back Harden because of the tax, or, you know, just not making proper coaching moves in terms of personnel when it came to Scott Brooks. So everybody's got this theory on that stuff. But the overall sentiment about Russell Westbrook is one of appreciation and sadness that he's gone, because this was the guy that didn't leave. You know, he didn't leave until basically his hand was forced. At the end he wanted to go, but like if they would have kept Paul George, I don't think Russell Westbrook was going to be the guy who was going to be the first one to demand out. Once Paul George demanded his trade, the writing was kind of on the wall for, you know, this veterans era, this two-star combination going for a championship. And frankly, they had kind of plateaued over the last 3 years post-Kevin Durant, as many teams would. It's just difficult to go win a title when you lose a player of Kevin Durant's talent and efficiency, as good as Russell Westbrook is. But, no, you're right. It's not the same feeling as a LeBron or a Durant, because this was a situation where the franchise and the city had kind of taken the identity of this player, even more so than Kevin Durant, because he stuck with them every year of their existence. And this is a guy who went to bat for Oklahoma City. He propped this city up when there were feelings of insecurity, I think, after Kevin Durant left. So Russell Westbrook and Oklahoma City are intertwined in that sense, and they always will be. He's the greatest Thunder player of all time. I don't think there's any question to that, and it's not even just a talent thing, because if you're looking at the talent, it's Kevin Durant. But if you're looking at the impact and, like, the heart of the matter, like, Russell Westbrook's the guy who meant more to everybody than any player that's ever walked through those doors.
We're visiting with Eric Horn, who covers the Oklahoma City Thunder for the Oklahoman. And now Russell Westbrook goes to Houston, where he's reunited with James Harden. Now, Eric, I don't know, because I don't cover the NBA on a daily basis, but there's all, you know, everybody's got a thought. Well, did James Harden get along with Russell Westbrook when they were in Oklahoma City? Are they actually good friends? Did they part on good terms? And are there enough basketballs to go around in Houston? Are they both going to be, you know, shot hogs, for lack of a better term? I don't know how it blends together, but having covered them, how do you think they fit together? Did they get along? Is it a good fit? Is it a good thing for Houston?
Well, in name of full disclosure, I wasn't on the beat when Harden was here. But I will say this, in all the interactions I've seen, you know, since Harden's been gone, in the 4 full years that I've covered the team, every time the Rockets and Thunder get together, Westbrook and Harden have a moment, whether it's pregame, postgame, and Westbrook doesn't do that with everybody. He's a guy who's pretty locked in pregame. I mean, from what I understand, they have a good relationship. I don't necessarily know if they're best friends, but I think they have a solid relationship. Certainly, better than the one that, you know, currently exists between Westbrook and Durant. So I think that that part's going to be okay. The basketball fit is the question, really. I think that the Rockets needed a change because of the Chris Paul Harden dynamic kind of burning out. I think the Thunder needed a change because they'd clearly reached a ceiling in those 3 years post Durant. So Harden and Westbrook sort of need each other in a sense. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who gives up some touches, how the offense flows with those two guys. Westbrook and Harden are two guys that have been in control for quite some time now. You know, Harden's had, you know, hadn't really had to make a ton of involuntary changes, or voluntary changes rather, in the last 7 years. When Mike D'Antoni came, you know, Mike D'Antoni put the ball in his hands even more. You know, Harden might get less of that now. And Westbrook has been a guy who, you know, even with Kevin Durant, was the guy who was primarily running the show. And in the last 3 years, it's been even more exacerbated. So these are two of the most high-usage players in the league, one of which, in Russell Westbrook, isn't a great perimeter shooter. So I'm curious to see is how that dynamic plays out. I have my doubts about it, but I think that the basketball aspect is going to have a lot to do with the relationship aspect of how that develops.
All right, Eric, just a couple of minutes left here. Whenever we have a guest on for the first time, I like to kind of look in the background and find something interesting about them. So I was looking into your background. Don't panic. I didn't find any, you know, anything untoward. But I got to be honest with you. It says your bio says you graduated from Oglethorpe University just outside of Atlanta, Georgia, in Brookhaven. I had never heard of Oglethorpe University. 4-year letter winner in soccer. And the nickname of the school, and I've never heard of this either, but I think it's fantastic. Correct me if I'm mispronouncing it. The Stormy Petrels?
It's a Petrel.
Petrel.
It's actually a Petrel.
And it's a seabird, it's a, right?
Yeah, it's like a crane kind of looking bird. It's white. I think as the story goes, and you could Google this, but there's a story out there about how people who, you know, were sailors or guys along the lines of James Edward Oglethorpe, who founded the state of Georgia, when they were out at sea in a storm and they were having visibility difficulties, they would basically take these birds, douse them in kerosene, and light them on fire.
Oh, no.
And the birds would fly towards land instinctually. And that is how the sailors would figure out which direction they were going. So it's kind of dark
a little bit
from that standpoint, but that's basically the mascot of my school. It's a small Division III school in North Atlanta, and it was a great place to go to school, and it's a place that I guess can, if they want to, take credit for producing me.
Hey, that's all right. Hey, also, you know, you're a 4-year letter winner in soccer. I'll just put it to you. The U.S. men's soccer team, after the Gold Cup, I feel a little bit better about them qualifying for the next World Cup in 2022. How do you feel about it?
No, there's no reason they shouldn't. I mean, look, they should have qualified for the last World Cup.
Yes, I know.
I'm really encouraged. Not even so much by the Gold Cup. Maybe there were a couple guys in the Gold Cup that stood out to me. I like Tyler Boyd.
Yes.
Aaron Long, Reggie Cannon. Reggie Cannon looked really good.
Weston McKinney.
I don't know if he's – yeah, Weston McKinney. You know, Pulisic obviously is,
yes,
who he is. But I was actually really encouraged. I watched a lot of the U-20s this summer in the U-20 World Cup. And I was really encouraged by a lot of those guys as well. You know, a lot of homegrown MLS guys in that group, a lot of guys who are currently playing overseas. You know, Sebastian Soto and Paxton Pomacall, who plays for FC Dallas. So there's a lot of talent in the pipeline. It's just a matter of them, you know, being able to establish themselves as professionals too. Because some of these guys go overseas and they kind of get lost in the shuffle and they don't get enough development and playing time. So it's going to be an important next year or so, in terms of the development of some of the younger guys, because I think that they'd actually stand a better chance of going young this next World Cup and just blooding those guys the way they did Landon Donovan, the way they did DeMarcus Beasley in 2002. And I think that 2002 team still to this day was probably, you know, the best U.S. team I've seen in my generation, just on pure talent combined with just guys who can go at people. So I'm talking too much here.
No,
that's I like
okay.
what I saw.
No, I'm a huge look. I'm a huge.
I'm encouraged.
I'm a huge soccer fan, and you know, we brought you on to talk Oklahoma City Thunder, but I think Chris, you might agree with me. We're gonna have to bring Eric back and put him in the soccer rotation because we have soccer people on all the time.
Oh yeah, we're big soccer down here in Kansas City. So that yes, absolutely.
All right, so Eric, we'll put you in the mix to talk some soccer. We don't even have to talk NBA, although we will.
yeah. No, I didn't even mention the Missouri guy, Josh Sargent, man, the guy who played at I think he played in St. Louis at he might be a Scott Gallagher guy. I'm not sure, but
yeah, sports.
Sargent's the one for the future too, man, and. That's the one hang up I had about the U.S. this summer is he didn't get picked for the Gold Cup.
Yes, I know.
Part of the reason that he didn't get that he didn't go with the U-20s is because they were doing the Gold Cup thing. So basically, the kid didn't play this summer. So
I know.
Like to be like, what were y'all doing with him? So they got to figure that out too. But I like him, and I like the direction they're going in. They just got to keep pushing forward, I guess.
Yeah, and Josh Sargent, I think Sporting KC had a claim on him as a hometown player, even though he's from St. Louis and they knew he was going to Europe anyway. But that's
he had no chance.
No, not at all. Hey, Eric, it was good to have you on the show. First time we've had you on, and again, we'll have you back to talk NBA, Oklahoma City Thunder, and soccer. We'll do it all. How about that?
Yeah, sounds great, man. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. That is Eric Horn, who covers the Oklahoma City Thunder for the Oklahoman. Good stuff. Getting calls at, you know, midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Petrels? The flaming petrels?
The storming petrel.
The flaming petrel, because they burn them.
They pour they used to pour kerosene on this poor bird to find land. Of all the things you could have written down today for things I wasn't expecting to talk about on the show, hearing about a bird being set on fire so sailors could find land was not on the list. But you find out interesting things about your guests. That was where he went to school. They're the Stormy Petrels. So you never know. We are way late for break. We'll take a quick timeout. You're listening to an interesting Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is here. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Has kind of a church organ kind of feel to it on this Sunday. Final minutes of who is this, by the way?
Slightly Stupid.
Slightly Stupid.
So
that's the name of the band. You're not calling me that.
No, okay. That's the name of the band.
Okay.
And yeah, this song is definitely not a church
no
song.
I just said that organ kind of feel. Maybe I should have said, you know, baseball.
And then the saxophone kind of comes.
There you go.
I love if you have saxophone in the song. Oh, I'm
you
got
to go. Got to listen to the '80s. Every song was required to have saxophone in there somewhere.
A little saxophone.
Yep. All right, we are wrapping up hour number one with two more to go here on Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. Just wrapped up with Eric Horn, who covers the Oklahoma City Thunder and the NBA for the Oklahoman. Good stuff there.
That was fun.
That was fun.
I really enjoyed that.
Found out things I didn't know.
About a school storming mascot. Stormy
Petrels. Yep. Yeah. You never know. When you ask a question, it's like if you're a lawyer, they always tell you, I have lawyer friends, don't ask a question if you don't know the answer. I asked a question. I didn't know the answer, but I'm glad I got the answer I got. That was good stuff from Eric Horn. Coming up next at 10 o'clock, Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, is going to join us. We'll talk college football. We've got Dennis has his list of college coaches and who's on the hot seat, who's not, who's safe, who's in danger. Plus, allowing student athletes to make a little money off their name, image, and likeness. Deep dive that Dennis does on that. So we'll do that coming up next. And then at 11 o'clock, Seren Petro. For the first time, he'll be my guest. Talk about his big move to Drive Time tomorrow, 2 to 6 p.m. Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll take a quick timeout. Back with more right after this.